Welcome back, everybody, to Silverlight TV. Today, I've got a special guest on my show, Jesse Liberty, Silverlight Geek.
Yes.
Thank you for coming on board.
Thank you, John.
And I'm John Pop of the Silverlight Evangelist at Microsoft. Jesse made special arrangements to be here today on campus to help us out, even shaved, as I understand.
Even shaved. Flew in from Boston and shaved just for this show.
Excellent. And today, you're going to talk about Hyper-Video Protocol, Silverlight Hyper-Video Protocol.
Yeah, it's none of those things, but you got the letters right, but not the... yes. It started out as the Silverlight Hyper-Video Project. It's become the Silverlight Hyper-Video Platform, because what we're discovering is that, in fact, the original idea is sort of growing and people are thinking about other ways of using it, which is always a good sign if people are using what you've built in ways you hadn't anticipated.
It is nice when you build something somebody uses it.
Well, there is that, too. Actually, shipping something is always nice.
Is this
as
a first for you?
Maybe.
Oh, okay. Maybe. All right, so could you tell us a little about what is HVP?
Sure. About 2 years ago, I started looking at, with Tim, about could you do for video what hyperlinks did for text? And Silverlight 2 at the time was out, and there were embedded markers, and we could respond to those markers, and we started thinking, oh, well, you know, you could be showing a video, and at different points in the video, when the person who's talking mentioned something that perhaps you don't know about or you'd like to learn more about, you could click, there'd be some indication, click, learn more, go back to what you were watching.
Right, so something embedded in the video to help you expand your experience with the
exactly,
video.
Exactly, exactly. So I think about 1,000 people invented the idea of hyper-video at the same time.
Right.
So about 6 months ago, our general manager said, you want to build that, that's a great thing, let's do that as a open source. And so the project really has about 4 different complementary goals. One is to build that, to look at what is the process of going from design all the way through implementation on a relatively real-world project, to do it on CodePlex, get a lot of community involvement, and hopefully build something that's actually useful for looking at how we convey information. We've been conveying information in kind of similar ways of video and white papers and tutorials for a while, and is there a way to put those different pieces together, perhaps with animation, with other things?
To increase the user experience and help people get more out of the videos.
Exactly. So, and you can imagine that rather than just watching a video on a particular feature, that you're watching a set of videos that take you through a set of features, and as the person is talking and explaining, perhaps they mention link. And if you're familiar with link, fine, you keep moving. If not, you click on the link to link, as it were, and it brings up an explanation of link. You go back to what you were watching. And I kind of like the idea of, you know, taking this well beyond how do I videos into, you know, I'd like to be watching the news, and if they mention some country I've never heard of or some leader I've never heard of, I can get more information.
Right, where is that? Or maybe it's a product for a commercial.
Or, right, you know, there's something that goes by and that's a product that would be useful. So rather than having an ad in my face, you know, if it's mentioned and it's useful and I'd like to learn more, you can imagine a whole lot of ways of doing
right.
that. So we started actually building this in mid-December. The goal is to have the first version ready for mix. We will have the first version ready for mix with a polished version. The little sneak peek we're going to look at is by no means polished, by no means complete. But it's been, for me, an incredible opportunity to not only look at building an application from start to finish, but to look at best practices, to look at some of the patterns, to begin to do work with test-driven development and emerging design, and a more agile approach to development.
So you're using what we promote all the time, things like MVVM and MEF and RIA
exactly.
services into this process.
Exactly. And all of those things have come together in ways that have been extraordinarily fruitful. So MEF, for example, allows us to build a very component, composite application. That allows us to say to folks who want to participate, yeah, absolutely, go for it, because your piece can plug in and this piece can plug in and you can mix and match. And MVVM has worked extremely well with the test-driven design. It's facilitated that in tremendous ways.
Excellent, excellent. So could we see what the end result is
no.
of HVP?
Yes, absolutely.
No. And that's the end of our show today.
Thank you for coming, and I appreciate you being here, John. What I'm going to do is run, this is not even the alpha. The alpha is available on CodePlex. I actually got a domain name for it just to make it easy for people to find. So Silverlight Hyper Video Platform, SLHVP, so you can go to slhvp.com, and all the documentation is there with links, and all of the code is there, and each of the releases are there, and discussions
okay,
about
great.
What we're doing, and so on. And this is fed back into mini tutorials and so on. So what we're looking at is this is a blank page. This is the internally in here is the Silverlight Media Framework, smf.codeplex.com. That's a separate project that I'm using, incorporating in.
Right.
The person who's talking is my older daughter, and she's explaining actually the architecture of this. And over here are the pieces, what we call the items in the set. So right now these are three videos, but they could be two videos and an animation. They could be,
right,
you know, two videos and a quiz, any number of things. As you're watching, the topics come up here, and you can click on a topic, advance the video. Finally, as she's talking, different concepts and ideas are coming up that she's not diving into, but the user could, for example, click on meth. This would pause, and over here you'd have a set of videos or tutorials, okay, or whatever about meth, the topics on each of those, and its links, and you can recurse inward.
Are the links dynamic that are up here?
What's happening with the links is we're going to support three different ways of doing the links. One is embedded in the video, mm-hmm, so Silverlight responds to markers that are in a video. This, and you could do that when you create the video. The second possibility is you could add to a video markers through marker injection.
Right.
The third possibility is that you can create a configuration, which we're going to do in XAML as a configuration file or in a database, and inform the application dynamically that I have links at these times, and we create essentially time objects, hand that to the viewer and say, I'm interested in this time. Mm-hmm. Now, because we want all of this to be entirely composable, this is all built with MEF, and none of these objects know about each other. None of these modules know about each other, but what they all know about is a common state object. So when something happens, they just announce, hey, something happened. And then they look and say, okay, has a state changed in a way I care about? Do I need to update?
Right.
So he, this guy, the links guy, can say to this guy, hey, I have a bunch of times I care about. I want to be notified when it's 1 minute, when it's 3 minutes, when it's 5 minutes. He only then will fire in something change event at those times.
So the links can subscribe to events from the video itself to say, when do these things happen? Let me know.
Yes, exactly. And in version 1.1 or 1.2, clearly what we need is an authoring tool. Right now, all this is being done by hand, but
right,
won't be terribly hard to...
Yeah, it looks like the end result is pretty polished on here. The question that comes into, is it easy to set this up as a developer who wants to put a series of videos together with links and topics?
It certainly will be. And will be. One of the things that we're hoping will happen... I love that.
One of the things in case you didn't catch his name. Yes.
Is that this is one look for it. Right. But certainly there are going to be other looks, and we have some folks inside of Microsoft and outside of Microsoft who are developing whole other appearances with different modules and so on. So we can look at a little of the code if there's time, or...
Yes, let's jump right into the code.
Go to code. Okay, great.
As much like watching your daughter in video, I think I would like to see a little code right now.
Okay. So one of the opportunities has been to do test-driven development, to do a more agile approach, to look at emerging design. And Robert Martin talks about his three rules for test-driven development are: never write any code until you have a test that fails. Only write as much of a test as will fail. Only that much and no more. And then only enough code to make that test pass. So, okay, that's a very rigid approach. Turns out that following that, and I cannot claim to follow it faithfully and all the time, but following that creates a discipline where you're writing, testing very quickly, and the design that emerges out of it isn't always the design you thought you were going in with, and in fact is a much more parsimonious design. You're really only designing and building for what you need, and
right,
it creates a more nimble development environment, which has been really a lot of fun.
It also gives you markers along the way, if
so
using another world. Yeah, to say, here we are with a particular unit of work that I just done, and this is stable now.
Yes,
and it gives you regression.
Yes, and it fits in very well with the whole lean approach. We've been using a Kanban board, which is just picture that we actually use an electronic one, but you can picture a whiteboard on which we say, here's the work we want to do, here's the work that's ready for somebody to do,
right,
put it into your area just one or two pieces at a time. When you think it's done, move it over for ready for deployment. We committed that every 2 weeks we're going to deploy whatever is ready, and we're going to be done by mid-March with the first version. So
okay,
the other key architectural piece has been kind of the flavor of the week is MVVM, and I admit to a certain skepticism. We've all been through kind of the pattern of the week problem, but MVVM does seem to lend itself extremely well to building Silverlight applications that are eminently testable. And the essence of MVVM, which I wrote with your help, mm-hmm, a very short guide to called It's Not Kool-Aid, And that's on my site, which is at silverlightgeek.me. My wife says I should go get the domain itsallabout.me. I haven't done that yet. Silverlightgeek.me. And by the way, all of this source code, all the documentation is on slhvp.com. Did I mention that? I'll mention it again.
We'll make sure we put that up, too.
There you go. Thank you. So the key, the essence of MVVM, at least as far as this project is concerned, is that the view, each of the objects in the view, each, we don't have it up anymore, but when we had the links and the topics and the center, each of those is in a module. That module has some kind of user control. Those user controls know what to display by binding, using the normal Silverlight data binding. So at the moment, I'm just using a simple list box. And the list box says, okay, where's my source of items? And where's my current item? And what text do I, you know, where do I get the text out of that item? That's all it knows. We then, when we create it, hand it a view model. And the view model becomes the data context that it binds to.
Right, so the view model provides the view with all the information it needs and the bindings to interact with the user and present
data. Exactly. And the second architectural decision was that the work of configuring those to get going ought to be the exact same work of storing that state so that when you go off to a link and then when you come back, you can restore it.
Right.
Well, once you have that and that's all uniform, that's the same work, that allows me to say, I'm watching, you know, there's four videos. I'm in the middle of the second one. I'm up to the third topic. Here are the links. Wow, John would be interested in this. I can snapshot that, write that out to the server, get back a URL. Mm-hmm. Now I can mail you the URL, and when you bring it up, you're in exactly the same state that my application was in. Or I can be working on it at work, go home, open it up, it's in the same state. So you can have either ownership dependent, you log in, boom, it's back where it was, or you can pass it
around. And to set a little baseline for this, I mean, using, it sounds like using MVVM and test-driven development in this case, and the different methodologies you've used, really helped you build what you were trying to achieve, maybe inadvertently, as you went along the process. So you've got a very modular application.
Other than the inadvertent part, I would say yes. But one of the things about this project that's been interesting is that it serves multiple masters, right? Mm-hmm. We wanted to build something useful for the community. We wanted to build something useful with the community. And we wanted to spin out tutorials on topics that I wanted to cover. And so there are times that we're making decisions that are about, okay, how can we use this as an experience that turns into a good tutorial or a good video? On the other hand, I've been trying very hard to stick to only design as much as you need, only build as much as you need. So very briefly, I'll show you, if we have that moment, I'll show you that this is, now my approach to MVVM is to actually take the view and the view model and the model and put them in different projects. And one of the things I like about that is that if I cross that barrier, I know it because it won't compile unless I put an include.
Right.
So
right.
For me, it works nicely. So
and just to be clear, this is one way of doing MVVM. There are many ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what I have in the view, for example, is I have a links view and I have an items view. All those videos and animations, we call those items.
Right.
And I have a topics view.
So these are your user controls on the page.
Exactly. And if you look at links view, it is dead simple. All that's in there is a list box, and that list box has those three properties we talked about. And my apologies to the Visual Studio team, because Visual Studio is much quicker than it is on my machine, which is running a bit slow for reasons we need not go into. But in here are just those three topics. In the code behind, let's just take a really quick look. There's our list box.
So I can see your list box.
Okay, so we're not, all right. And you can see that there are three pieces, and if this were working, what I would show you is that they all have bindings. And then in the code behind, there's just this one method with one line that sets the context, the data context, to the view model.
Right.
Now, because I wanted all of those components not to know about each other, necessarily, or have load dependency of order, which one has to be loaded before the other, Jeremy Miller, in an open spaces conversation at CodeMash, suggested using a state object, which has worked out extremely well. So when any of these modules change, if you click on a topic or you click on a link, they just announce the world has changed, and they inform the state object, and then all the other modules can go find out if that change affects them.
Now, is the state object a singleton, or how does that?
It would be a singleton, but it creates a little bit more dependency and makes testing a little harder. So what we do is we have the application start up, create the state object, and then in the constructor to all the view models, they're past that same state object.
Gotcha.
And it just decouples them a bit
more. So there you're using DI to accomplish something for you.
There you go. We're assuming DI is not drill instructor, but dependency injection.
Yes,
yes, I agree with you.
Yes.
So in the links, we've got the links view corresponding to the links view in the view model area. We should have a links view model, and that is serving as the data context for the link.
Right.
And what I have learned to do with the help of some really great people on test-driven development, Bob Martin's always a guiding light. There have been a number of other people, and I'm terrified of getting their names wrong, so I'll just, they know who they are, and they're acknowledged in my blog. I've begun to do the work of backing off of this and saying, okay, let's start at the really just the simplest concept. You know, what does it have to do? Well, what does
right.
it need to be able to do that? And have this slowly emerge out of what
the view
is going to be in that view
model. Public
model.
Properties and members that are actually going to be used by the view.
Exactly.
To do the bindings.
Exactly. Now, one issue has been, how do we get that communication going if we want an action? It has turned out, because of Silverlight's built-in notify property and because we're using the centralized event, I haven't actually had to do link actions, although you can get that working in the expression samples.
Yes.
There is the ability to bind a behavior to an object, which is a very cool capability, which I would love to use. Unfortunately, I don't need it right now. So that's been interesting.
Right.
We're using via services because we want to be able to take these objects and persist them either in a database or as XAML files, or as XAML files in a database. We want to be able to use via services to turn that into objects that essentially create our view model that we can then bind to and then be able to write them back out.
Right.
So we've had the opportunity to use a fair amount of the new material in Silverlight and really explore that well while building on top of, really standing on the shoulders of giants, right? The Silverlight
right.
media framework, MEF, a number of other people's open source work has been folded
in. To be very clear, you didn't have to use MEF or MVVM or RIA services or any of this technically, but it helped you get to where you're trying to go.
Right, and we tried very hard not to use anything until it was needed. Now,
right.
you could argue RIA services at this moment, we could have gone with a WCF service because we're just pulling data out, but we know we need to build an authoring tool. RIA services is going to make that enormously easier.
Well, with the change tracking and the rules and the validation,
exactly.
the sharing of code, yeah,
right.
absolutely.
And the delta between doing a regular WCF and a RIA services was so small that it just made sense to incorporate that
right.
and get going with that. So it's really been a blast, and people have been amazingly responsive and amazingly supportive, and it's been...
So can you show us, you have some links on where we can find the source code, any further information?
Absolutely.
What about when's this going to be available for people to look at?
Okay, so it is available in its most primitive alpha form. If you go to slhvp.com or slhvp.codeplex.com, either one will work. The homepage sort of gives you a general idea. If you go over to documentation, there's a quick index to what is this, how do I get involved? And it really is just a matter of sending me an email saying, hey, I'd like to be involved. And then we have the progress notes are links to all of the what we've learned and how it's evolved over time. And I've broken this into current progress notes that sort of will tell you what you're looking at and what the pieces are and sort
right.
of explain all that. And then the progress notes history, this is done in what I call Glasshouse, which is you're going to watch me make some wrong turns and go down some evolution. I want that documented. On the other hand, I don't want it in the mainstream because I don't want...
Sure.
confusion. By the way, one of the interesting approaches that I'm trying in this is to have self-revealing naming in the extreme. So at the moment, we have zero comments in the code, which is kind of a radical approach. And it'll be interesting as people begin to look at this code if they say, okay, I totally get it. You know, it's totally self-revealing. Or, okay, that was a nice theory, but could you write some comments, guy?
Right. So there's no variables named X and Y and Z. No.
Well, there are some counter variables named I, but that,
gotcha.
Which goes back to Fortran, by the way. But anyway, yes, we try to have reasonably revealing names of both not only the variables, but the methods and the classes, and,
right.
and not need comments, looking at comments skeptically. You know, if you're putting in a comment, is that because it does need that additional clarification or context, or is it because you haven't written this in a way that is revealing? And we're trying to make very small methods, very small classes.
And did you say at Mix you were going to be releasing a version of this?
It will be released at Mix. It's in nobody's agenda for Mix, but I will
right.
be in whatever the big room is or the open spaces
the
room, show
cool,
the commons,
yeah.
showing it to anybody who I can grab. You know, grabbing people out of the street, say, come look at this. Let me show you this. This is really cool. And
cool.
I'm hoping folks will stop by and, you know, we can talk about it and talk about the design and talk about where it might go and so on. So on Codeplex is all of that. And then on CodePlex, we have two areas. One is the downloads area, where we're up to release 3, which is an alpha release. So every 2 weeks there's a release. And for those of you who are truly gluttons for punishment, there is also all the source code available for each of the tiny little incremental. I use lots of check-ins. I live in terror of my
multiple
machine.
Multiple times a day, yes.
Multiple checkpoints and small incremental changes. And so all of that is in source code as well and available. And CodePlex is very nice. You can click on any of these, and then you can work your way down through the code and see the pieces and then watch those changes happen.
Right.
So all of that is
a very transparent process that you're going through.
That's the goal.
That's excellent. Jesse, thank you for coming on, and looking forward to talking to you more at Mix in the comments. And if anybody else is interested in talking to Jesse about HVP, please email him, go to his blog, or come see him at Mix.
jliberty@microsoft.com. Thank you, John.
Thank you.